We still don't have an official quorum, but I think we'd like to begin the testimony of the Higher Education Committee. We'll officially call it to order when we have a few more members here. But to begin with, we'd like to welcome Minskew here for a presentation on bonding. And you may proceed. We'll interrupt when we have to officially call the meeting to order. Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Nornes, members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you today to discuss the investment priorities that will help Minnesota State Colleges and Universities meet Minnesota's workforce needs, provide an extraordinary education to our students, and keep us the state's most affordable higher education option for over 400,000 students. Seated with me is Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. In his role, Brian is responsible for one-third of the state of Minnesota's total space. He leads both our capital investment prioritization process and our successful execution of investment projects. Brian joined us just a little over a year ago. He came to us from the United States Air Force, where he was a colonel, and he brings with him 27 years of logistics and facilities management expertise. And we're glad to have him on our team. Chair Nornes, also with us today are three of our presidents, President Richard Davenport from Minnesota State University Mankato, President Richard Shrub from Minnesota West Community and Technical College, and President Don Cipolla from Rochester Community and Technical College. They're here not just representing their individual institutions, but representing all 31 of our presidents. Along with the presentation, we've also provided you copies of our bonding book, which contains the details of each of the project requests, a handout which also shows the details of our execution plan, and I'm going to start with a brief overview of today's presentation and of the system.
Chancellor, before you do that, we'd officially like to welcome you to our committee. This is your first appearance, I think, in front of
yes, sir.
Officially in your new capacity, and I want to formally welcome you, and we'll be seeing you again in the distant or the not too distant future, and we'll see you often, probably.
I think we'll be seeing each other often.
And
look forward to it.
So, just wanted to officially welcome you here.
Thank you very much, Chair Nornes. Our investment priorities are focused on the infrastructure needed to advance Minnesota's workforce, both to improve learning spaces and support the growing need that our state has for scientists, health professionals, engineers, precision machinists, technologists, and other workers that are in short supply. Our request falls into two major areas. First, essential repairs to workforce training facilities, HEPR, to do several things to prevent further deterioration, to avoid increased future costs of repair, to lower operating costs by improving efficiency and reduce energy expenses, and to meet the requirements under the American Disabilities Act and to bring our facilities into compliance with other health and safety codes. Second, we have workforce skills gap-driven projects to provide the labs and classrooms required to deliver to business and industry the graduates they need to meet not only their current but their projected workforce needs. Each of the projects we'll be discussing today has been through a rigorous prioritization process. We are presenting today only our most urgent needs, which represent roughly one-third of the $900 million in projects that are needed for our system. As you'll see in a moment, we're also very efficient and effective in our execution of projects. The investments immediately create jobs and put thousands of Minnesotans to work in communities across our state. Any bonding bill is going to produce jobs in Minnesota. What distinguishes our projects is that we're investing in the facilities that train Minnesotans for the work that needs to be done across our state. Many of you have visited our campuses or attended project briefings, and I'm extremely grateful for the time you've devoted to doing so, and appreciate your interest in those projects. Our goal today is to help you understand the broader context for these projects, and of course to provide some details on the investment imperatives. And I welcome your questions, Chair Nornes, and members of the committee at any time. I want to talk first about the system and the strategic direction of our colleges and universities, and then Brian will guide us through the investment request, highlighting the prioritized repair and workforce skills needs, and the impact they will have across the state. So let me start with that very quick overview of the system. Preparing Minnesota's workforce with the job skills required by business and industry is the core mission of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And I'll tell you that in my first few months on the job, I've been deeply impressed by the broad and deep impact our system has on our state's economy, its citizens, and businesses in every region of our state. This request is on behalf of 31 colleges and universities. These campuses, as you know, are a vital part of the life and vitality of 47 communities across our state, and they provide access to higher education for citizens across our state. Our physical plants, comprised of over 850 buildings, nearly 27 million square feet, roughly one-third of all the state's facilities. This is where the teaching and learning and workforce preparation takes place. Over the past decade, the demand for our programs has soared. Enrollment is up 15%. Investment in our facilities is needed to keep pace with the number of students we are serving. Today, we educate more than 400,000 Minnesotans in communities across our state. That's over 80% of all the new nurses, all the new people going to the construction trades, all the new cops, all the new mechanics. Over 9,000 firefighters and first responders each year. We educate the city managers, the civil engineers, the CPAs, the entrepreneurs, that is, the professionals who lead every sector of Minnesota's economy. They're not only students fresh out of high school, they're also adult learners, workers and professionals, retooling themselves to meet the needs of Minnesota businesses. And more than 80% of our graduates stay right here in Minnesota, either going right to work or continuing their education. In addition, our colleges and universities have ongoing partnerships with 6,000 businesses across the state of Minnesota to provide customized training to over 120,000 of their employees to help those employees and those companies remain competitive. At the same time, we are prudently managing our costs to improve our productivity to keep higher education affordable. Over the past 10 years, the real cost in constant dollars of educating a Minsku student has actually declined 10%. Who pays the cost, of course, has shifted as state support has dropped and tuitions made up most of the difference. Our productivity in terms of credit hours per square foot has improved 20%. Our faculty productivity in terms of students served credit hours per instructional faculty has gone up 7%. And if you look at our system compared to the other systems of higher education across the state and look at our administrative spending compared to those other systems per student, we're at 37 out of 50, and that's one of those lists where you want to be near the bottom, not near the top. Minsku serves 60% of all of Minnesota's undergraduates. And the diversity of our programs includes highly skilled two-year technical programs, which drive the need for a wide spectrum of facilities that extend well beyond the typical classroom. Let me just give you a couple examples so you have a flavor for the kind of facilities that train the future workers of this state. Health and medical programs, whether it's cardiovascular technology, respiratory therapy, dental hygiene, paramedics, nursing, radiology, surgical assistance program, They all require learning spaces that include simulation labs, mock dental offices, surgical suites, radiology rooms, and even rescue squad vehicles that replicate the environments that students will encounter in the world of work. If you think about our manufacturing robotics programs, they require clean spaces to house the latest in computer-aided grinders and lathes and spaces that provide the power and HVAC that not only protect the equipment, but protect our students.
Chancellor,
yes,
can
sir?
I interrupt for just a moment? We do have a quorum now, and I'd like to officially call the Committee on Higher Education, Policy, and Finance to order. So we're now officially in business.
And if you think about our heavy equipment and diesel tractor, trailer, operator, and maintenance programs, well, they not only require space to drive and operate construction loaders and scrapers and bulldozers and over-the-road rigs, but also space indoor to tear down those machines, to rebuild them and to test them. We think about our law enforcement programs. They require live firing ranges and buildings that provide mock-ups for scenario-based response technique training. All of these kinds of facilities, along with laboratories and the traditional classrooms, enable our faculty to train people for the workforce skills that Minnesota needs. And as I said, we serve more than the traditional 19-year-old. We are the place that working adults come to for certificates, two-year, four-year degrees, and graduate programs. We're the place that people come to when they've been displaced from their jobs, and when it's time to update their skills, or when they just simply wish to prepare for their next career. And we're the place that businesses, large and small, across the entire state come to when they need to retrain their employees and when they need help solving practical problems. This is why we are uniquely positioned to help grow Minnesota's economy and why investment in our workforce training facilities is so crucial to the future of Minnesota's prosperity. The essential role that we are playing in growing the state's economy and keeping the doors of educational opportunity open to all Minnesotans is our core mission. Under the strategic framework that our board unanimously adopted, we are committed to doing three things. One, ensuring access to an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans, preparing graduates to lead every sector of Minnesota's economy. Second, being the partner of choice to meet Minnesota's workforce and community needs, and to keep our workers at the leading edge of their professions. And finally, we are committed to delivering to students, to employers, to communities, and to taxpayers the highest value, most affordable higher education option available in our state. Every one of these three commitments is core to meeting the workforce needs of Minnesota. So we're advancing the workforce agenda by leading efforts on four fronts, and we'll have time, Chair Nornes, when we get together again in a couple weeks to get into a little more detail on these points. But briefly, we are mapping region by region, sector by sector, Minnesota's workforce needs so we can align our academic programs with those needs going forward. We're developing a better pipeline of talent to ensure that all Minnesota students graduate high school, are college ready, and are on path to the education that will lead to the work that Minnesota needs done. We're investing in the infrastructure necessary to train the workforce of the future, and we're delivering better services at lower costs. And our capital proposal advances all four of these areas. Now, as someone, as the chair has noted, is new to the Minsky system, I have to tell you how impressed I am with the rigorous prioritization process that exists within this system. Every project is aligned with a campus master facilities plan, and it's regularly reviewed and updated. The board establishes precise guidelines that lay the foundation for the priorities. Project pre-designs are prepared, updated, reviewed, and validated. Projects are scored by teams of professionals consistent with the guidelines established by the board. Campuses make presentations at public hearings, and then the board reviews and approves the prioritized projects contained in our request. I participated in the final crafting of the request that's before you and underscored several needs. Number one, We must advance the strategic priorities of access, quality, workforce, and value. Second, we must minimize new square footage. We must take care of what we have. We must make it more efficient and more flexible. We must demolish or mothball facilities that no longer are viable in terms of conditions, operating costs, or programs. And we must consider new square footage only when it meets all three of the criteria we've laid out in the board's strategic framework. One final point before I turn the presentation over to Brian. This slide shows the status of the investments that you approved last year. You can see that we are very effective in the execution of these projects. Implementation was quick, immediate, and it immediately created jobs, putting thousands of Minnesotans to work in communities across our state. During the 2011 session, $132 million was provided for the system's capital needs. All $30 million of those essential HEPA repairs are on our campuses in the form of 82 projects that employ Minnesotans working for 229 local contractors and subcontractors. We are on track to have 90% of those funds encumbered by March 31st of this year. The additional $102 million for the seven major capital projects that address the workforce skills gap needs of business and industry are under contract with 132 local firms. Five are already on the ground, and two are in the process of final design and pre-construction services. Simply put, we're 100% on track with the funds you've allocated last year. With that as a backdrop, Chair Nornes, I'm happy to answer any questions that arise at this time, but I'm also happy just to turn it over to Brian to walk through the details of the capital request.
Okay, Chancellor, we have a question from Representative
Mr. Chair, it's a process question. Yes. When we hear these recommendations, are you going to hold the recommendations and then this committee will do some type of a prioritizing for the bonding committee, or are we just going to hear them and the bonding committee is going to do all the work?
I think our plan at this point will be to hear them and hear from members if they have any particular opinions, I guess, but more than likely forward it onto the bonding committee for the final selection.
So, Mr. Chair, my next question would be, if the bonding bill is significantly smaller than the governor's, and this request is based on the governor's, then it will be the bonding committee that will be doing the reducing and not the higher education committee. There has been, in years past, this committee has done the recommendation to the bonding committee.
I know it's been done both ways. And right now I think that we're leaning towards letting the bonding committee do the final selection. But we're a ways away from that yet.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I hope that this conversation will stimulate perhaps a return to this committee actually doing the work of higher education. I have another question.
Yes, go ahead.
Do you anticipate that we will have a supplemental bill of any kind coming out of this committee? Not in bonding, but in either policy or finance?
I think at this point it's doubtful.
So we'll just be having informational hearings?
Well, we'll have a bill here and there that'll come through, but they'll be traveling by themselves.
Thank you.
Representative Rukavina, you have a question?
Kind of to both points, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pawlowski made. What if members have a bonding request for their higher education institution in their district that isn't on the governor's bill? I mean, do we get a hearing on it here? Can we throw it out if you decide to make recommendations and prioritize to the bonding committee?
Well, I think that we'd be open to whatever the members wish. If they have a particular project and it's not on there, we'd be cordial and hear that. And also would like to hear just discussions informally, not necessarily now at our committee, but if you have opinions on how we should proceed, feel free to talk with me or to Mike.
And will the chair treat the former chair as good as the former chair treated the chair?
Always. It would be helpful if you'd arrive earlier.
Mr. Chair, I kept track of you when I was the chair, and I'm coming earlier than you did.
Really?
And a question for Chancellor Rosen. What did the governor... The governor kind of jumped over things, right, Chancellor?
Chair Dornis, Representative Riccovina, I believe the governor stepped over only one project, which was number 12, Rochester Community Technical Project. He took 12 of the first 13, recognizing, of course, that his HEPA recommendation of $20 million in contrast to a request of 110 makes it the lowest HEPA recommendation, lowest HEPA number that we've seen, I believe, since 1996 when the HEPA program was created.
So I understand.
Senator Riccovina.
Mr. Chair, he went to 13, but he didn't include 12.
That is my understanding.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, Chancellor, then how are you going to prorate or prioritize your HEPA list, you know, if it is 20% of what you requested or 50%? Will you just cut these numbers on the list to that percentage, or will you toss some out, or is there a way you're going to prioritize it?
Well, first, Chancellor, our presentation today is about everything that's on our original list. It is not just a presentation about the governor's numbers. So we want to share with you the full needs of the system and allow for a full discussion of those needs. If we end up with a HEPA number which is less than $110 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, we'll go back and analyze taking the priorities from each of the campuses and figuring out how we can get as much work done for our campuses. Prioritize based on the campus needs that we can with the resources that are available. It's a give and take process. The staff has built a couple of models that we're working on right now to reflect, hopefully not as low as the governor has recommended, but different iterations between the 110, which we believe is the investment needed for the system, and any alternative that's it's been done in the past. It's a similar process we've used in the past, is my understanding.
Okay. It's just my feeling that as we move this on to the Capital Investment Committee that we may make recommendations, particularly around the HEPA issue. This committee may feel that that's too low. We may not have a number, but we may encourage them to look at increasing that amount. My personal opinion. Any other questions? If not, please introduce yourself and continue the presentation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Yolitz. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the Minnesota State College and University System. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon and the entire committee. In support of our capital improvements program, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities seeks state funding of capital requirements of $222.5 million with the system financing $56.2 million for a total capital improvement program of $276 million for 2012. This is the smallest capital request from the system since 2000, and it reflects a lot of hard work done in our campuses in terms of right-sizing and making our facilities as flexible and responsive to academic needs as possible. The capital program is made up of three elements. First, $110 million for the higher education asset preservation and replacement or HEPA needs, focused on essential repairs and renewal of existing facility space, directly supporting workforce programs across our system. $157.1 million funds 22 major capital projects at 16 colleges and 5 university campuses. 14 of the 22 projects have been with the legislative committees in the past, but ultimately were not funded at the end of individual sessions. In addition, within our request is $11.6 million funding 3 system initiatives where we bundled projects in the $200,000 to $1.5 million range focused on workforce areas at multiple campuses. This request focuses on workforce areas of science, technology, and math, or STEM, with 10 projects, energy initiative with 6 projects, and then classroom initiative with 5 projects, pursuing a total of 21 projects at 12 campuses in our colleges and 2 at universities. All of our projects are shovel ready.
And I would draw your attention to the chart with the colored lines on as a reference. We are poised and ready to execute our projects and move them to the next phase of design or construction. We recognize that carpenters, electricians, sheet metal workers, painters and equipment operators can't work until engineers and architects have done their work, so we include design as an important part of the shovel-ready equation. The color chart that you have in front of you shows our execution strategy for each project being requested, assuming funds are available in June of this year. Projects are listed in priority order as approved by our Board of Trustees in June of last year. The colored hash marks correspond to the various design and construction phases of each project that they must go through to deliver the scope of work that's being requested. The green and red elements highlight the design phases, everything from A&E selection, schematic design, design development, and then ultimately creation of construction documents. The yellow and blue elements show our bid and award periods and ultimate actual construction and ultimate punch list and project closeout. At the top of our list is our HEPA requirements requesting $110 million for 53 campuses across our system. It reflects the Board of Trustees' number one priority and our commitment to the workforce spaces within our system that exist today. Over 95% of this investment is in existing facilities, infrastructure repairs, in the renewal and preservation of both interior and exterior of our physical plant, and addresses the aging systems within those facilities, making them more efficient, more effective, and ultimately reducing the operating expenses at our campuses. The balance addresses code and standard compliance issues and accomplishes advanced design for some of our more complex future HEPA repair and renewal needs. The HEPA portion of our request is critical to our campuses. And it's important to understand and to recognize investments in HEPA is as much about buildings and systems, it's in the project title, as it is about the workforce training and learning spaces these systems and facilities serve and protect. HEPA is about protecting and sustaining workforce training capacity. We want to underscore this point by just a couple of examples in the HEPA requirements we seek to address. First, at Anoka Ramsey, at our Coon Rapids campus, we need nearly $1 million to replace a leaking roof at the campus center there, impacting allied health, classroom and lab spaces, and our STEM programs housed beneath those roofs. At Rochester Community and Technical College, President Sapala will be certain to talk to you about his electrical system there. He needs $3.2 million to repair that system. That supports his 300,000 square foot main campus area that houses his workforce classrooms, his STEM programs, allied health teaching, and technical lab spaces. We started a bit of the work earlier this year with FY11 HEPA dollars to replace some failed transformers, but we have a ways to go in that area. At Inver Hills, we have water penetrating the west walls of their business building foundation and damaging some interior spaces there, housing key classrooms, computer labs, and STEM programs, and negatively impacting the workforce learning environment. Finally, at Fergus Falls campus of our Minnesota State Community Technical College, $750,000 will replace two inefficient steam boilers that are over 45 years old with one high efficiency hot water system regulating the heat and domestic hot water for the campus's STEM, allied health, and allied health spaces in the classrooms housing their key transfer studies programs at their campus. It also makes the campus operationally more efficient and drives down their operating expenses, all making their operations better and better for students. Each project in our plan has a story like this. Bottom line, HEPA is about protecting and sustaining workforce training capacity. Our 22 major line item capital projects and three initiatives are focused on supporting the workforce needs of the communities surrounding our campuses, the regions they serve, and the state as a whole. The projects touch on technical lab spaces, STEM areas, allied health, as well as general education classrooms and the baccalaureate needs of the workforce. Many of our projects touch more than one of those elements of the workforce. Some, in fact, nine of those projects impact all five. As a brief overview of the individual projects, I draw your attention to the bonding book that you each have in front of you. in your packages. On page one, you'll see our overall project list prioritized as our Board of Trustees did again last June. On page two, then, reflects a little more detail about HEPR and individual projects there. START being identified with the $13.4 million request for Minneapolis Community Technical College Workforce Program Renovation.
Can we interrupt for a moment, Pawlowski, to have a question at this point or later?
Well, it was on the previous slide.
Can we back up to that? Representative Pawlowski, go ahead.
Yes, on this slide, when you went through the Fergus Falls boilers, you said they were 45 years old. Can you explain how 45-year-old boilers are somehow missed in your rigorous oversight for 45 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, though they have worked for a good period of time and they've reached the end of their useful life, preventative maintenance has been able to limp them along, but now it's time for these to be replaced. They would have been replaced probably earlier, depending on how much HEPR funds were available. But now's the time. They've reached the higher level of priority and are going to be addressed in this cycle, we hope.
Mr. Chair, and I ask the question because we had the same problem at Winona State with boilers that were approaching 40 years and somehow had not been on any critical list for replacement. And then when they get to the point of potential failure, then there they are. I raise it because we had the problem at Winona. And here it is again. Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Yes, Representative Pawlowski.
Do these represent your most critical replacement needs if the bonding bill were to shrink significantly, or if there was no bonding bill? Do you have a list of things that are probable to fail if they're not fixed? That would be a roof, boilers, anything. Does such a list exist?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, indeed we have a list of the highest priority needs that are in each of our campuses, and we rely on them to identify those where failure is imminent or in the process, as we noted in some of our roofs.
Then, Mr. Chair, where are these on that list, the four I see here?
They're all in our list of $110 million being requested.
But if I were to prioritize that in a critical situation, where would these be? Would they be near the top or near the bottom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, indeed, they would be very near the top of our requirements.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm asking these questions because when we visited campuses before, requests were made by legislators to have a HEPR critical list of what was absolutely necessary on each campus, and that list was always their number one priority. And that's why I made my earlier reference to maybe this committee actually doing the work on this part of the bonding bill, so that we had a grasp of what was absolutely critical and needed to be replaced. And I'm hoping that on each of the campuses such a list still exists and that list can be accessed, and that we know that if there isn't a bonding bill, or if the bonding bill critically shrinks, that we're not going to see something fail.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor. Representative Pawlowski, indeed we've got our number one projects at each of our campuses, those critical needs total roughly $50 million, and we see those as must-pays in my language in terms of what needs to be done during this biennium to attack those most pressing needs at our campuses.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would hope this committee would focus on the must-pays as a priority and a recommendation to the bonding bill, so that when that bill gets smaller, the must-pays are considered, and we're not going to face. I know what happens when you have potential boiler failure, and if we have leaks, roofs that are leaking, and we have classrooms and high-tech systems that are being inundated. That should be our number one priority, given everything else that's happening.
I think in that Fergus Falls project, the campus has changed in the last 40-some years, too, and probably we're also overtaxing the old system somewhat.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what happened to Winona. We added on buildings with a system that couldn't support them, and we got to a critical point. And the boilers at Winona actually pumped the water out of the basements because it's on a sandbar. So it would have been a double failure had they failed. We would have had flooded basements. We would have had no heat or cooling.
You may proceed, Mr. Yulitz.
I recall we were in the process of reviewing the highlights of each of the projects in the bonding book. We're on, I believe, page 2 of the bonding book with a MCTC, the Workforce Program Renovation. The next page, page 3, reflects projects at Willmar and Worthington. Both of those projects have been before the legislature in the past, and we're ultimately not funded. Pages 4 and 5 reflect projects at Faribault, Coon Rapids, Brooklyn Park, as well as Marshall, advancing workforce needs there, as well as preparing designs for future capital investment requests. Page 6 reflects two new requirements where we've experienced high demand for our workforce programs at St. Paul College, as well as Century College. On page 7, in Rosemont at Dakota Technical College, the Transportation Emerging Technology Lab is an important investment in workforce needs there. And in Rochester Community Technical College, in a workforce co-location project, work to partner with DEED in providing a partnership between workforce and placement services with our campus there in Rochester. Pages 8 and 9 reflect projects, first of all, at 9 campuses as part of the STEM initiative that I discussed earlier, 10 projects at 9 campuses, also a design project at MSU Mankato for clinical science design. That project was a part of a request that was vetoed in the last session. And then on the next page, Bemidji State University and Metropolitan State University, where they're seeking to fund the construction of their science education center, which was the design was funded as part of the special session in fiscal year 11. I know the team is very anxious on moving that forward, and that's an important element of the baccalaureate programs here in the metro area. Page 10 and 11 continue with Rochester Community College classroom renovation design there, Staples campus of Central Lakes College, and Grand Rapids, a project that's an important one there, demolition and replacement of a facility, and then down at Riverland Community College at the Albert Lee campus, right-sizing and reconfiguring their facility spaces. On page 12 is two of the final two initiatives, the Energy Initiative, with 6 projects at six campuses, as well as the Classroom Initiative, doing 5 projects at 4 of our campuses, particularly focused on making those more efficient and more effective in the delivery of workforce training. On page 13, at Moorhead and Winona reflect projects that are new to our list. And finally, on page 14, St. Cloud Technical Community College, the medium heavy truck and auto body addition is an important project for that region, as well as the Alexandria Technical main building renovation work. And that rounds out our total request for capital improvements, and they touch on individual workforce needs for the state of Minnesota. All told, the total capital program directly supports workforce programs across the state. From the Northeast, the classroom renovation at Ely at our Vermilion Community College, to the heap of work at Rainy River Community College in International Falls, to the transportation and diesel technology renovation, in addition, nursing labs and STEM initiative in Moorhead, to energy and advanced diesel technology programs in Canby, power line training programs in Jackson, and classroom renovations in Faribault. It makes an enormously positive impact on our institutions where workforce learning takes place. In summary, our investments are focused on the infrastructure necessary for advancing Minnesota's workforce. Our $78 million capital program seeks $222.5 million in state financing, with $56.2 million from system resources to address essential repairs and workforce skills gap-driven projects required to deliver business and industry graduates with the education and skills required to meet their current and future needs. Each project has been thoroughly reviewed and vetted through a rigorous prioritization process. We are committed to being very efficient and effective in our execution of the approved projects and quickly creating jobs to put thousands of Minnesotans to work in local communities throughout the state. We're ready to answer any additional questions you may have. We certainly appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Members with questions, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to build on what Representative Pawlowski was talking about. I'm looking at Representative Banyan just because given that we're both in the classroom when we're not here, and I'm thinking about what's critically needed, and certainly repairing the roof, replacing the boilers, in one sense, those are critical projects, I think, as Representative Pawlowski stated. And I know that, I'm suspecting Representative Pawlowski didn't mean to limit the definition of critically important to those repairs. And so what I'm thinking about, Representative Manning, is that students in your class or my class, if they don't have the STEM buildings, if they don't have the laboratories or the research facilities, they only have the number of years in college they have. It's like I always say, you only have first grade once, hopefully. And you only have a college...
Well, some of us.
I was worried about that.
I know. I'm setting myself up. But I guess, Representative Banyan, I'm not asking you, but you might want to comment as well, but my comment is to the Chancellor and to our testifier. College students have only those years of training, hopefully, once. And to me, the STEM buildings, the laboratories, the things that will help students retrain or train for the workforce and the employees, the employers in Minnesota are looking for, they have that opportunity once. So to me, the definition of what's critically important is twofold. It is those repairs and replacement of facilities that are either aging, that need to be maintained, it's the roofs, it's the basements, it's all the HVAC, but I would still define the other things as critically needed too. That the students who are in the classroom, for them, that's a critically needed lab. If you build it in 10 years, you did it too late for me. And so I guess I would just ask you to comment. Do I understand it correctly that we should be looking at critically necessary from both the maintenance restoration point of view and from the student education workforce need point of view? They're both critical. Am I right about that?
Chancellor Rosenzweig?
Chair Nornes, Representative Morrow. What we bring forward to you is not the wish we could have list. It's not the everything we might think of list. It's not the looky-loo list, maybe something will stick list. It's the list of priorities that we think need to be funded for us to fulfill what Minnesota's asking us to do, which is prepare the workforce of the future. We can't keep on talking about job skills gaps and not fund the facilities that are designed in order to educate the students to meet those needs. We can't talk about protecting the integrity of a welding program or an HVAC program and not have the facilities protected where those training programs exist. And the list before you is the top priorities. We have done our best to try to prioritize within those critical needs what ought to come first based upon established criteria that the board has set and the evaluation, rigorous evaluation that was done. But this is not a looky-loo list. This is the list of priorities.
Representative Morrow.
Just a short follow-up. And again, I agree with Representative Pawlowski about what are the critical on the HEPA projects. But I'm not going to feel left off the hook if we took care of some segment of the HEPA list and didn't address the other list as well. To me, it's a both and. If we really want to maintain our facilities, help educate our students, and help our economy.
I don't know if there's a...
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I've been around here, I guess, longer than anybody but Representative Pawlowski. And I think that the Minsky Systems does a pretty good job of prioritizing. But in the end, Representative Morrow, you know, what's critically important is what the local legislator decides when he puts in a bill for his district. That's what I've seen. And, you know, Representative Pawlowski, Winona's done very well to your credit. You've done a great job. But I don't ever remember you putting in a bill to fix the boilers at Winona. Maybe you did. I don't know.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, you may not have been in the hearing room when President Krueger and I spent 2 hours before the Higher Education Finance Committee and then another 2 hours in front of the Bonding Committee, and where President Krueger, to his credit, admitted it was his mistake. He had not listened. And this is the conversation we should be having in this committee. When you have campuses that come, a new building is great. You get the groundbreaking, and you get the pictures, and you get the shovel. If your boilers fail, that building isn't heated or cooled. And in Winona's case, if they failed in the winter and the water was in those basements and froze, you would have no building, period, on campus that didn't need to be replaced. So I bring up the point that we had a campus that built new and didn't understand what it was stressing on its main boiler capacity. It learned a very difficult lesson. And a governor, who was a wrestler, vetoed the boilers the first time with his pig stamp. And then he learned what they were and put it as the number one priority in his bonding bill the next year. So, Representative Rukavina, I have spent my fair share of time before committees on this issue and on other related HEPR issues. I don't think any campus should come to us with a new building unless they have everything repaired that is on that campus first. But well, that's my opinion, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I believe I asked the question, but Representative Pawlowski, you and I came in together. You built a lot of new buildings before Ventura was governor. That's all I got.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Isn't this great? We're not pressuring you guys.
I don't think this is a conversation we want to be part of.
Mr. Chair, that's Both why I brought up in my first conversation that as a result of what happened to the Winona boilers, the Minskew system was to have in place from that point on a critical list of HEPR. And that critical list was to go on top before they presented a new building, which Representative Rukavina says a member would put in a bill for a new building. But you can put in a bill, and whatever the building costs, but this committee should, because it has the responsibility to the state of Minnesota to protect current infrastructure. And that should be our number one priority, and a president should come up and say, here's what has to be fixed, then the new building.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to just
Chair Narnas at the risk
Chancellor,
the number one priority on our list is HEPR. And we also need to recognize that as the workforce needs of Minnesota change, so too will the facilities needs. As our population changes, so will the facilities needs. And we're trying to get the proper balance between having a full enough list of HEPR so we avoid those critical moments. And that's what the long list is about, is avoiding those critical moments, but also recognizing that with evolving workforce needs will come the need for different facilities to train the workforce that Minnesota business needs. And that's the proposal we've created to try to reach that balance.
Just for information for the members, you can get some, if you're looking at political miles, we actually had a ribbon cutting for a new roof at the college in my town. So you can get a photo and you know, make a big deal of it. So even a boiler probably would work. So. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chancellor Rosenstone. This list that we have in front of us, these are prioritized by campus. Will we be getting a list that, taking all these off this list, what is the prioritizing for HEPR? Is that going to be done, or is it just going to be prioritized by campus?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we have not done a 1 to 100, or actually 1 to almost 300 count. We try to address each of the campus's number one priorities. It's very difficult at times to slice between a failing boiler at campus X and one at campus Y. We haven't done that in the past.
Yeah.
According to a conversation that's been going on, maybe all the boilers that are failing should be replaced. You know, those are just a comment there. Thank you.
Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I agree with both Representative Pawlowski and Representative Morrow. I have an office mate when I was chair who had a pile of paper wrecked by a leaky roof. I think the leaky roof is on our HEPR list here for SCSU. So, hey, it matters, and it doesn't just matter in terms of structure of the building. It matters for some of that professor's teaching material was taken out by that water. So it does matter to us very much, but it also matters to us that we have a place for students in rooms that we can teach them in and that can give them the most up-to-date training and make them as competitive as possible. And that takes me to the question for either Chancellor Rosenstone or Mr. Yolitz. How many more students will the university system be able to serve if you were able to build through your entire list, and how many through the list that's been approved and on the governor's request?
Who would like to try to answer that?
Chair Narnas, Representative Bannion, we have not done the calculation off the governor's list. The list that we create is responsive to where we've had the most enrollment pressure and where we don't currently have the facilities necessary to serve current enrollments. The simple fact of the matter, as you know, is that Minnesota needs a very much better educated workforce going forward. In the year 2018, we will need 70% of our workforce with some post-secondary education. And all the new jobs being created between today and 2018, 83% of them will require some post-secondary education, with over half of those jobs requiring not a baccalaureate degree or higher, but a certificate or two-year diploma. That means that we need together to find a way to serve more Minnesotans in the workforce, in workforce preparation than ever before. And on top of that, we need to recognize that the pace at which work is going to change is going to continue to place a very heavy and increasing demand on our capacity to retrain workers for the new skills they will need to remain in the workforce. That's going to put tremendous enrollment pressure on our colleges and universities going forward. We also, at the same time, have to find ways in which we can meet that demand by even more efficient use of our facilities. And we've shared with you already what those gains in productivity of our facilities have been. But we're going to have to continue to search for ways in which we're going to meet those needs by increasing productivity of our existing facilities as well.
Representative Mannion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chancellor Rosenstone, I remember when we used to do these and we used to always be hoping for money to build a new building to put, I'm old enough to remember mainframes and the fact that we had to do our computers on cards and so on. There's been a real push, I know, within Minsky for enhancing your ability to deliver instruction online. Does that ever come up in these discussions about capital investment, or is this always something that we have to look at doing from year to year through our appropriations or through your revenues from tuition?
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Chair Narnas, Representative Bannion, part of our productivity gain has come from the fact that we've moved nearly 24% of our enrollments online. And so that's why we've been able to use the existing facilities far more effectively than we would have if we had not had that available to us. The question going forward that we are wrestling with is, what's the proper role for online? Many of the programs that I described to you, health professions, heavy equipment, precision manufacturing, do not lend themselves very easily to training the workforce we need by having them sit in front of a computer monitor getting it all online. So we need to understand where it's going to be an appropriate advantage to the quality of the education we want to provide and perhaps to productivity, and where it's simply going to destroy the quality of the kind of workforce we need for Minnesota to be great. The other thing what we're discovering through our research is that not every learner thrives in an online environment. In fact, those that are most challenged by higher education find the online environment to be the least advantageous one for them to accomplish what we need them to do if they're going to be prepared for the workforce. So getting the right balance and embedding it in the long-term academic plan is exactly what we need to do going forward. But some of the productivity gains you've seen in the use of our facilities come from precisely the greater reliance on online education. We did not see a 15% growth in our facilities, but we had a 15% growth in our students.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suspect, Chancellor, this will be another conversation we'll have sometime down the road, but thank you for your answer.
Look forward to it.
Representative Benson, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's, asset preservation, to me at least, seems to be the most critical issue here. Not that I'm not going to argue the merits of the other things, regarding the plan. Certainly, you're going to make a case for them. If we had all the money in the world, we could make this great case about how we expand. I guess my greater worry is, though, because I had the student representatives in my office today, and is more in thinking through, I add X amount of new additional space to my campuses because of the need. I'm not going to argue your need. But have you factored in what the operational costs will be and looking at that and scaling that through the next 5-10 years, what that will do to your overall budget with adding all that new? And importantly to me is you always pass that a chunk of that on to the student. So have you calculated and talked with those groups about what that new building or whatever it is will mean to their tuition?
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Chair Narnas, Representative Benson, very good question indeed, a two-part answer. One, at the individual project-by-project assessment, there is a full-blown financial plan for the operation of that facility, so it's indeed taken into consideration. But more importantly, the position I have taken and what's reflected in the totality of this request is that this request is space neutral. This request, if fully implemented, does add space on some campuses, but it does also take off space on campuses where it's no longer needed. So we can move those resources, which are supporting facilities, which are no longer serving students, to those campuses where we need the facilities to serve students and prepare the workforce. Like you, I think from the underlying assumption of your question, which I think we're in agreement with, is we do not have a sustainable plan going forward for the system if we imagine that we're going to keep on getting bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of space without using existing space more efficiently and right-sizing campuses where appropriate. So we're not presenting you a proposal which is willy-nilly just adding more space without a financial plan. The macro-financial plan is neutral with respect to space, and the financial plan that's in place on each campus has a sustainable program for sustaining that space going forward.
Representative Benson.
I think, Mr. Chairman. So from that, I can deduce then that the idea that we need to pass on a tuition increase to students would be neutral. I mean, if you're going to use the existing space, and ideally what you're saying essentially is it's more heaper. You're adding maybe space to different locations, but in terms of tuition pass-throughs, we shouldn't look for that.
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Chair Nornes, Representative Benson, there are several things that go into deciding what a tuition is going to be. One of them is how much state support we no longer have that needs to be made up. Part of it is what that heating bill is going to be, what the light bill is going to be, what the insurance bill is going to be, what the health benefits are going to be, how we're going to have competitive compensation to keep the best faculty in our classrooms, whether there's new technology we need to add to ensure we have cutting-edge programs, or whether there's additional investments we need to make to improve the quality of those programs. Those are all part of the equation of what tuition is necessary to get the right balance between access and excellence, and that's what we're struggling with.
Representative Benson.
And I don't want to belabor it, but for me at least, it is just so that we know going in that if we approve some of these projects, that indeed, granted, all those things are factors in whether or not tuition's got to go up, whether or not we've got to allocate more money out of the higher education budget, and so on. But to at least admit to ourselves that some of this is going to get passed on in tuition increases.
Chancellor Rosenstein.
Chair Nornes, Representative Benson. If we pass the entire package as we presented with you, it is space neutral, and we would not be adding square footage to the system. If instead only portions of this are passed and the parts of the package which envision reducing the footprint, which produces tremendous savings, which therefore would offset the new square footage, if we have that situation, there will be new costs. If we can't get this right balancing, which is what this proposal has attempted to do, then there will be additional costs.
Any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Kind of to represent Benson and Chancellor, but correct me if I'm wrong, and I can't remember exactly. I mean, with your requests here, you're required to put in a third. And of the third, the central office plays, what's the figure again, and the local campus, the students pay X. What is it, three-fifths, two-fifths? I can't remember of your third.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, it's the system is responsible for one-third of the debt service on the capital projects, the line item projects.
Right, but you,
then that
your
is divided,
third.
That is divided in half. So one-sixth comes off the top of the system budget, and then the other sixth is passed along to the gaining campus for servicing.
So Representative Benson, regardless, the student's going to pay half of the third. But there's also, and I can't remember the exact, maybe council can help me, the bonding fund that we have where you can do a, if you want to call it a revenue bond type thing. And you've asked to up that limit many times in the past. And, you know, I'm curious, how much outstanding debt is that Minscu now on those revenue type bonds? Which the students pay all of, right?
Mr. Yulitz?
Mr. Chair,
or whatever revenue comes
to. Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, currently we have authority within statute for $300 million worth of a debt in the revenue fund, which funds our residence halls, student unions, our parking complexes, whether it's surface or parking garage, and then a lot of our wellness and fitness programs. So authority is at $300 million. Currently, our outstanding debt is right around $255 million, We just sold some bonds to build a parking garage at Normandale Community College in Bloomington, and then also had a bond sale early in January. We're on a two-year cycle for that. We're looking at approximately $100 million worth of requirements, everything from taking care of residents' life buildings that were built.
When you and I were kids.
That's right. Probably a polite way to put that. They need a little bit of tweaking and some maintenance and repair. And also we've got a request for a new student union at one of our colleges. So all those go in. We're doing the math right now to make sure those projects, as Representative Benson expressed concern, that they cash flow, that we've got the understand that what the impact on fees is going to be along with operating expenses to service that debt and provide a viable financial on-take for the campus. So we are indeed going to seek an increase in the authority. We're in consultation with each of the student organizations on that topic right now.
Any other questions? If not, thank you for your presentation, and we will continue to talk bonding, I think, from members as we go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Norris.
Thank you. Don Larson is next on the schedule. Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee, and go ahead and introduce yourself formally, and then we'll proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nornes and representatives. My full name is Donald F. Larson, a professor at Minnesota State University Mankato, but here in my role as the president of the interfaculty organization, the IFO, which represents the faculty members of the seven state universities of the MinSCU system. I'm both proud and pleased to be here to follow Chancellor Rosenstone and Associate Vice Chancellor Yolitz in announcing that the IFO and our faculty members fully support the bonding request put forward by the system office. We will echo the points that the Chancellor and Mr. Yolitz made, that these projects support, are by and for Minnesota workers. It will support the preservation and operations of Minnesota resources for the benefit of the learning and education of Minnesota students. I also want to put special attention on our belief that the system's request for the $110 million in HEPR funds is more than justified. I think among our faculty members, very few of us would be able to actually tell you what HEPR stands for in terms of its initials. We certainly know all too well what it stands for in terms of its effect on our lives, our abilities to teach, and that of our students to learn. The health, safety, and comfort of our teachers, our students, and the support staff are critical to enable us to fulfill the missions of our universities, our departments, and our programs, to see that students graduate in a timely manner, that they have the total learning experience which our universities can offer that will allow them to go forward and be productive citizens and workers for this state. I think I will actually just leave my comments at this point, because you've heard them expressed very well before by the Chancellor, Mr. Yolitz. I see my own president, President Davenport, sitting in the audience. I know he can speak very clearly to Mankato's needs, and I know others from Metro, from Bemidji, from Winona, and our other campuses can speak equally well to those needs. But I will stand for any questions you might have.
Members, questions? I see no questions here, so I appreciate your testimony.
Okay, we appreciate that too. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Next, we'd like to hear from the State University Student Association. Amanda? Welcome.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and representatives. I'm Amanda Bardonner. I'm the state chair for the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm a senior at St. Cloud State University majoring in international business and marketing. Thank you so much for the opportunity to approach you today. I know that my predecessor, Andrew Spaeth, had a great working relationship with you last year, and I look forward to that same opportunity. Though this is the first step in the process, our association looks forward to working with you, the Senate, and the Governor, to discuss the capital bonding and especially the HEPR recommendations from the Minsky Board of Trustees priority list. The $110 million HEPR request will replace the roofs, the boilers, the HVAC systems, all of that you have already heard of today. And those dollars are ready and can be implemented immediately with our local contractors and get them back onto our campuses. To Representative Benson's question, a little bit earlier, if the funding for HEPR projects is not placed as a priority and funded at a substantial level, the current backlog will only increase. Projects can only go so long before replacement is absolutely necessary, transferring the cost of those projects to our university and our students, therefore in turn transferring the costs directly to students. At a time when student loan debt is at an all-time high, we cannot afford to push these costs to students. These HEPR projects will help us provide the environment and facilities necessary to educate and train the workers needed for Minnesota's recovering economy. The goal of our colleges and universities is to expand access to an extraordinary education and the best value for Minnesota, and a high-quality facilities play a key role in this opportunity. As the process moves forward, I look forward to continuing our partnership and continuing to stress the importance of the HEPR funding for the Minsky campuses. I'll stand for any questions at this time.
Members, questions? See none. So I thank you again for your testimony, and we'll see you here often.
Yes, no, thank you.
All right. Next, the State College Student Association. Jeff, you've been here before?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Nornes. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dipperner, president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, here representing over 100,000 public two-year community and technical college students. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today. It's a privilege to reintroduce myself as the president. I've had the chance to meet all of you in my capacity as vice president, and I know that you share our mission to maintain the highest quality, most affordable, and most accessible higher education for our students. In regards to capital projects, our message is simple: fix it first. We would like to see the legislature follow Minsky's bonding list as much as possible, but with the emphasis on HEPR projects that will keep our campuses warm, safe, and dry. It's no wonder that HEPR is ranked number one in Minsky's bonding requests. The $110 million request ensures that our system keeps up with its deferred maintenance backlog. This backlog has reached $775 million. Funding HEPR projects making progress on the backlog will avoid costs due to neglect, help keep tuition low, and meet the demands of Minnesota's workforce. When these projects are not funded, it only increases the costs associated with deterioration and delay. Campuses are forced to delay critical maintenance projects or pay for them from campus reserve funds. This incurs unnecessary costs that could be avoided through these preventative HEPR projects. With average tuition and fees at our two-year colleges continuing to be the third highest in the nation, the HEPR projects benefit students by helping to mitigate tuition and fee increases associated with new capital projects. Unlike line item projects, no debt service is assigned to Minsky, which relieves pressure on future tuition increases. Once HEPR is fully funded, we encourage the legislature and the governor to support the rest of Minsky's capital budget requests. The selection process for these projects is a thorough and arduous task, which reflects the response to the demands of Minnesota's workforce. If Minsky is going to continue to contribute to Minnesota's educated workforce, it's necessary that we have the infrastructure to meet the industry demands. Once again, MSCSA is encouraging you to fix it first and protect what we have before funding other projects. With that, I conclude my remarks, and I will stand for any questions.
Questions? Representative Deborah.
First, thank you, Mr. I like that term, fix it first, warm, safe, and dry. So thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, listening, you had a number in there that took me aback a little bit. And I think you've got it right. So don't. You mentioned the backlog of Heber. What number was that again?
$775 million.
Mr. Chair, would it be okay to ask the Chancellor to return? Is he still in here? Sorry, you're in the middle of the row. I apologize. Would that be okay, Mr. Chair?
I think that's it's okay if he's willing to come down. Or
Mr. Yolitz. That's fine.
Yeah.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Yolitz. Yes, go ahead, Representative Morrow. Ask the question.
Mr. Yolitz, we just heard a number of north of $700 million in backlogged HEPR relevant projects. And certainly, I think, for example, Representative Benson on transportation, we hear about the backlog of road and bridge projects throughout the state. Is that number correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, the number, we're in the process of recalculating the number. Right now, campuses are reporting right around 650, 655 is the number we're getting as part of our analysis. It reflects those projects that we weren't able to get to or had to make a conscious decision that we're not going to fix this issue today because we think we've got a preventative maintenance program that'll go out for a while. So in the $700 million range is correct. 650 is the number we're working with right now.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing forward the number. Because if I do this correctly, it sounds to me if we fix it first, which I agree with, fix it first, we have just at $100 million of bounding rounds, we're going to be here for 12 years talking about fixing it first if we do $100 million bonding every other year on HEPR projects. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, our strategy has been to understand that we're not going to be able to do a $700 million bonding bill to fix all HEPR, fix it now. Although fix it first does sound good. Clearly, we're trying to cut our backlog in half over the next 10 years, and that's how we've come up with the $110 million of the most critical needs and slicing that pie smaller and smaller over time.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that gets back to my point that I agree we should be fixing it first, but if we put off all the improvements and new buildings and new labs until we've fixed everything first, you and your younger brother and your little nephew are all going to graduate from college before we start doing the new buildings that are needed for the workforce and for students. I'm just concerned that if we got to be careful, we should be doing the fix it first. But there's a lot of fixing first to be done. And we still need to have the teaching space.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, we are in full support of the entirety of the list, and Brian can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the $110 million reflects necessary progress towards meeting that future amount. And you know, these HEPR projects, just as the other line item projects, ensure that our classrooms can both attract and train the future workforce, and of course at no cost, additional cost to students.
Representative Pulaski, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Chair. Does that $650 or $700 million include buildings that would be taken offline and destroyed?
Mr. Yolitz?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, it does include the demolition, would include some demolition. Yes, it would.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Pulaski,
when we get a more detailed list, where are those? You don't need to tell me now, but where are those buildings by campus, and then where would they be as we begin to work down the list? And I raise the question because you have some campuses that have some buildings that have been campuses that have some buildings that have been there. They're no longer functional. Then they're no longer repairable. So I don't need it now, but I think in our ongoing discussion, I would like to see where those buildings are and what you, when you plan to take them offline.
All right. Any other comments, questions from members? I don't see any. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And, we appreciate students being here as well as professionals. So I think we have to have a motion here for the minutes on January 26th. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Representative Bukovina moves the minutes of January the 26th. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are approved. And I think with that, members, our meeting is adjourned.